A dozen. Mission.
You're listening to This Week in Radio News. Radio news about radio waves, radio art, and more. I'm Tom Rowe, your host, and we'll travel across the ether to hear what's going on in radio news.
This is Tom Rowe reporting for Wavefarm Radio and WGXC. Net neutrality, the Federal Communication Commission's reclassification of ISPs as common carriers under Title II of the Communications Act, took effect at midnight June 12, 2015. Hours before, on June 11th, a three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit denied a stay sought by corporate carriers such as AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast in the hopes of suspending the rules until their broader lawsuits against the FCC were settled. The carriers claimed the rules were, quote, vague and onerous, unquote, and create, quote, significant uncertainty about the introduction of new services, unquote, while, quote, exposing providers to costly litigation, unquote. The U.S. Court of Appeals disagreed, writing, quote, petitioners have not satisfied the stringent requirements for a stay pending court review, unquote. Quote, this is a huge victory for internet consumers and innovators, unquote, FCC Chief Tom Wheeler wrote in a statement posted to the FCC website. Quote, starting Friday, there will be a referee on the field to keep the internet fast, fair, and open. Blocking, throttling, pay-for-priority fast lanes, and other efforts to come between consumers and the internet are now things of the past. The rules also give broadband providers the certainty and economic incentive to build fast and competitive broadband networks, unquote. The FCC is regulating the portion of the airwaves used by internet providers in the same way they enforce rules in regards to other portions of the spectrum, such as telephones. The court case seeking to overturn the net neutrality rules will take at least a year before a decision, and the presidential election next fall may determine if the rules will last or if a Republican president and Congress will roll them back. This Week in Radio News is looking for voices trying to explain what the opposition to net neutrality is exactly, and since the decision and the implementation now of net neutrality. Here's three from the cable television industry. Susan Daniel, president of Horizon Cable, speaking in a pro-business environment on a channel called VIODITV in Silicon Valley about what net neutrality means to her business.
Your company, Horizon, has been a cable operator for about 20 years. You and your husband built it from nothing, and you're serving areas where no one else would serve. So how is the impact? What's the impact you see in, from what we saw last week from the FCC's order?
Well, I think the impact is going to be a lot more, well, with the rules and regulations always comes a lot more compliance issues, paperwork, much higher legal budgets for us because we're so small. There's five of us total, so there are no in-house lawyers. It'll be me and my husband trying to figure out the new rules. And that takes us away from doing other things, improving services for customers, serving our customers, and it's expensive. It's very expensive to hire the outside attorneys to tell us essentially what we need to comply with, what we don't, how to do it, how to, you know, fill out the paperwork. So we've done it before. We've been through this, you know, before, 20 years ago. And, you know, I don't think the internet's not going to end. We're still going to do all that. But it's going to be costly, and I think customers are going to end up paying more in the long run.
Now let's hear from Tim Wu, who coined the phrase net neutrality, speaking June 11th at a World Hostings Day conference.
You know, that we let companies freeze the future. You can see what that happens in other industry. Look at the airline industry, for example. You know, the last big inventions in airplanes, commercial airliners, were in the 60s, sort of like frozen. The telephone industry got frozen for like 40 years, where their idea of innovation, you know, they spent like 10 years on call waiting and call forwarding. That was the big step forward. And then every, you know, 10 or 20 years, they'd introduce a new telephone, you know, and it would have a different color. Or they got touch tone. Touch tone took like 20 years. You know, that kind of thing. So there are industries that get frozen. And I guess my life's work is to prevent the internet from becoming like the airline industry or like the phone industry, the old phone industry, where it was just sort of frozen. All right. So I'm concerned about this kind of trenchant. We are in this terrible situation. And not only, as I said, do we have obviously the carriers were not interested in net neutrality rule, but the big internet companies, Amazon, Facebook, Google, were perfectly happy to sit on their hands. Now, one reason is they've become much more, over the years, conservative. They don't like to go out on a limb. But also, they knew, deep in their hearts, that on an uneven internet, an uncompetitive internet, they win. You know, they're already there. It's never going to be the internet giants who advocate for policies that make possible their replacement. They might sort of say they believe in them ideologically. A lot of people in Google, you know, engineers, they have good values. But when it comes down to the bottom line, they're like, well, this law is going to make it easier for our replacement to show up. And one way, one day, you know, it's like Game of Thrones or something. One day, kill the king. And so they are kind of all not really that interested in things. And that's maybe partially why some of the big internet companies don't like the hosting industry so much, because they know that's where someone's going to show up who might kill the king, you know, making it easier for small companies. They kind of like to do that, but there's some mixed relationship there. So everything seemed somewhat doomed because they were sitting on their hands. But then, luckily, one day, a miracle happened. And maybe you can show this video.
Our top story tonight concerns the internet, aka the electronic cat database. But first, let's take just a moment together and appreciate how amazing the internet is. You can use it to file your taxes, apply for jobs. You can go online right now and buy a case of coyote urine. Do you know how difficult it used to be to obtain coyote urine? You literally had to give a coyote Gatorade and just wait. It was a mess. The system was a mess. But if you've turned on the news lately, you may have heard some worrying references to the internet changing.
The Federal Communications Commission has agreed to move forward on a proposal that could change the way we use the internet. At risk, the basic principle of net neutrality.
Net neutrality.
Net neutrality.
Yes, net neutrality. The only two words that promise more boredom in the English language are featuring Sting. And hearing people talk about it is somehow even worse.
As anticipated, the notice proposes to ground the net neutrality rules in Section 706 of the Telecommunications Act of 1996.
So that happened. And, you know, little things can make a very big difference because that video came out. Next thing that happened is a lot of the startup economy, particularly New York and some in San Francisco, started getting active, decided they had to do something, and they started coming to Washington. They started meeting with people, and they started saying, you know, this isn't going to fly. And something really quite extraordinary happened last year. The precedent is really SOPA PIPA, which the hosting industry had a lot to do with. Is that suddenly, you know, it's sort of like geeks will stay quiet for a while, but if they get poked too many times, they rise up at these moments. And suddenly, hundreds of thousands, millions of people started sending comments to the FCC. In fact, they sent so many comments, so many phone calls, the servers, I guess they don't use good architecture, whatever, because everything collapsed. They couldn't accept any emails. And they just kept coming and kept coming and kept coming. And the chairman of the FCC actually, you know, wants to do the right thing. The problem is his idea of what the right thing was came just from listening to what Verizon and Comcast had to say. But when he started seeing thousands, millions, when he started being visited by all these startups, he started thinking differently about this, and he decided he needed to do more. A crucial point in the fight for net neutrality came when the political part of the White House started thinking, this issue actually kind of matters. I mean, there's a general tendency for all tech issues, almost all tech issues in Washington, nobody thinks they get the average voter excited. And so politicians feel they can do almost anything they want because no one is going to notice. So that really becomes a lobbyist-driven game. You see, you might have the most progressive senator on one issue, but then it'll be like, well, copyright, no one's really paying attention to copyright except for, you know, my friends in Hollywood, let's say, so I can take completely their stand. You know, and telecom is even more like that. I mean, you heard what it's like to talk about telecom. It's crazy issues. No one really seems to understand them well. But somehow net neutrality pierced that fog. People in the White House woke up. The president was fundraising, and he ended up sitting next to, on several occasions, people, I think one was the CEO of Etsy, another the CEO of Tumblr, who were like, you got to do something about net neutrality. And so November came last year. Democrats lost the Congress. President Obama, nothing to lose, gives this big speech and says, we have to have the strongest possible net neutrality rules. Make it so. A complete turnaround. We were dead in the water a year ago. A total turnaround. Within 4 months, net neutrality rules became the law, and in fact, they are the law right now. So I call that a good news story. It has a lot to do with activation around an issue that really mattered. And I think and I hope that it preserves some of the competitive conditions of the internet that have been so important to its profit, its growth, and its competitiveness.
Sky News in England have discovered fake mobile phone masks used to eavesdrop on telephone conversations in London. The International Mobile Subscriber Identity IMSI catchers are known as Stingrays after a U.S. company that makes the devices, which send a signal that tricks a mobile phone into connecting with the Stingray rather than a legitimate base station. In 2011, The Guardian reported that the devices were being used in London, but the Metropolitan Police refused to comment at the time. A 2014 article in the Times of London gave a legal framework for their use. The English authorities are still keeping quiet about the devices as freedom of information requests about IMSI catchers from Privacy International and Sky News were refused. Privacy International's Eric King told Sky News, quote, with IMSI catchers, it's very difficult for them to be used in a targeted manner. In an urban space, thousands of people's mobile phones would be swept up in that dragnet. What they do with that data, we don't know, unquote. The Citizens Broadband Radio Service is just what it sounds, a sort of digital version of the CB radios that became a fad in the mid-1970s and are still used by truck drivers. The Federal Communications Commission this spring announced the new service. John Anderson at DIYmedia.net explains it uses frequencies, quote, between 3.5 and 3.7 gigahertz that will be opened to both licensed and unlicensed services. This spectrum has traditionally been reserved for military radar and satellite uplinks. Now it may become a sandbox for dynamic use of the public airwaves, unquote. The spectrum is set aside for devices to sniff around and find non-congested frequencies. Google is working on a database of Citizens Broadband Radio Service users and devices updated in real time from the devices themselves. The Navy and satellite ground stations will continue to use these frequencies, but they leave plenty of room for other uses from registered corporations with, quote, geographically targeted short-term priority rights, unquote, but also for unlicensed use. Anderson writes, quote, the FCC will reserve a healthy segment of this band for unlicensed wireless use, providing a critical space to experiment with small-scale mesh networking and other innovative uses of spectrum in concert with smart devices, unquote. Read more at DIYmedia.net, and full disclosure, John Anderson is on Wavefarm's board. There aren't many places left with virtually no radio waves. In the United States, just near Green Bank, West Virginia, in the U.S. National Radio Quiet Zone, 13,000 square mile area where most types of electromagnetic radiation on the radio spectrum are banned to minimize disturbance around the National Radio Astronomy Observatory, which holds the world's largest steerable radio telescope. Everywhere else, humans are bombarded by radio and TV broadcasts, Wi-Fi networks, cell signals, baby monitors, NSA bugs, and other radio signals. In May, nearly 200 scientists submitted an appeal to the United Nations requesting it take action against the health risk of electromagnetic radiation. Quote, cell towers are blanketing our neighborhoods with radiation. It's particularly frightening that radiation from our telecommunication and power line technology is damaging the DNA in our cells. It is clear to many biologists that this can account for the rising cancer rates, unquote, said Martin Blank, a retired special lecturer in the effects of electromagnetic radiation on cells at Columbia University Medical Center. 2 days after that report, the Berkeley, California City Council approved an ordinance that would require a notice to cell phone buyers regarding exposure to electromagnetic waves when they carry the devices close to their bodies. Quote, if you carry or use your phone in a pants or a shirt pocket or tucked into a bra when the phone is on and connected to a wireless network, you may exceed the federal guidelines for exposure to RF radio frequency radiation, unquote. The notice reads in part. A copy of the notice must be given to anyone who buys or leases a cell phone or be prominently displayed at the retail outlet in Berkeley. Now, a month later, on June 8th, wireless carriers filed suit to kill the cell phone radiation notification plan in Berkeley. The wireless industry's trade group CTIA said the notification plan, quote, contradicts the federal government's determination that cell phones approved for sale in the U.S. do not pose a public health risk, unquote. In 2011, CTIA successfully fought a similar law in San Francisco that required phone sellers to disclose the emissions produced by each model. Now the CTIA says the proposed Berkeley ordinance, quote, will mislead consumers and it is unlawful, according to Gerald Keegan, senior director for state legislative affairs for CTIA. Quote, the proposal is unlawful because it violates the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, unquote. Harvard Law professor Lawrence Lessig, speaking at a Berkeley City Council meeting recently about the issue, said he is increasingly concerned that the First Amendment is being used by corporations to bully citizens into inaction. This is Tom Rowe reporting radio news about radio waves for this week in radio news. And the Radio Survivor blog gets mentioned on this show often. RadioSurvivor.com is a location of much radio news about radio waves. And now producers Paul Rimsmondale and Eric Klein, along with editors and correspondents Jennifer Waits and Matthew Lazar, are producing a Radio Survivor podcast with news about community radio stations, low power FM, 250-watt and more in their first episode. Let's hear a little excerpt from the Radio Survivor podcast.
Welcome to the Radio Survivor podcast, episode number one. I'm Paul Rimsmondale, and I am a co-founder and editor of RadioSurvivor.com, a website about the future of radio. It's tough love for radio. It's about all the radio that is great, which unfortunately is not most of it. And with me here is Eric Klein.
Hello, everybody.
Who is co-producing and co-hosting. Hey, Eric, why don't you introduce yourself?
Oh, my. Radio Survivor listeners, I am one of you. Unless you're not a Radio Survivor yourselves and you're just lurking. I worked at KPFA in Berkeley, and that was my first radio job, and I loved it. And I started when I was in my mid-20s, and I lasted until my mid-30s. And then moved to Portland. And while I was there, I did everything that they would let me do for money and for free. And I enjoyed
like,
all of it.
That sounds like community radio. Mm-hmm. In fact, in community radio, you're lucky to have done it for money.
Yes. Yeah. KPFA is a very special place. And I've learned that since I've left and tried to get other work.
And KPFA, of course, the flagship station of the Pacifica Network, which of five stations, community stations around the country, but the Berkeley station being really the founding station of community radio in 1949. Is that correct?
That's what they tell me.
That's what they tell you.
I wasn't there.
No, neither was I. So you did radio there. We met here in Portland, Oregon, where I now live. Into starting this. And that's why we're here. I'll give my little bio. I have been in radio a long time as well, college radio, community radio. I spent a long time at community radio station WEFT in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois. It's really where I cut my teeth on community radio, holding a lot of volunteer positions and occasionally some paid positions helping with pledge drives. And for about 7 years, I produced a radio show turned podcast called Media Geek, which was about media policy and media democracy. And that ran from 2003 to 2009, first at WEFT, then at radio station WNUR-FM, which is at Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois, just outside Chicago, where I had actually advised that student-run station for 5 years before moving here to Portland.
So a little bit of college radio and a little bit of community radio.
Yeah. And WNUR was kind of one of those hybrid stations, a lot of community volunteers. And they had a great relationship actually with the students. And it was a very student-run station. It was a
finally, on This Week in Radio News, we tune into 31 Down Radio Theater and their story, Dead Dial Tone.
You wanted me to do. Now I'm through. I'm through with it, and I'm finished with you. Mike! Hi, Mike. Why did you make me do people? Why? Mike! I baited them like you left. Baited me. All those years, Mike. You did so little to help yourself, Mike. You just help yourself with my emotions scattering in all over the pavement like salt. Mike, like rock salt in an icy New England road. I feel like someone's following me. I feel alone here in this bumpless looking at an empty world around me. Like I'm staring through a glass casket, and I'm out here in a concert mic, and you won't even respond to me. I'm scared, Mike. Don't you see that? Someone's following me, Mike. Oh, why? Why won't you say something? Say something, Mike. I'm leaving, Mike. I'm packing my bags and I'm moving on. Does that worry you? Mike, so damn well, but she won't even care. One more thing, Mike. Stay out of the dutch. And well, I know you told me not to do what I did, but I had no choice. They asked me about you, you know, and the fact that I told them everything. Can you hear that? A voice from a glass tomb is entering your face in silver. Goodbye, Mike.
That was Dead Dial Tone from 31 Down Radio Theater on This Week in Radio News. Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.